Oh, hey, how are you? Great to hear. Yeah, come in. Make yourself comfortable. Like a drink? Sure. There you go. Welcome to the Tech Lounge. Shall we begin? Welcome to 2026 and the first Tech Lounge of 2026. Took a little bit of a break over the holidays, but back now with a good chunk of episodes coming up over the coming months. Kicking off with this one, where I spoke with Ellen from Key Factor. And Key Factor are a PKI and certificate lifecycle management tool, predominantly for agentic AI systems. Now, this might sound a bit buzzwordy, but it's actually quite, well, obviously it's quite zeitgeisty because agentic AI is everywhere, but it gives access to agentic services as and when they need it, keeping that security, but allowing companies to use that agentic flexibility. So that's quite interesting. Before we begin, now, this podcast, my videos, require a bunch of editing, and I use numerous different tools for this. And one I have been trialing recently, especially for the text-based audio editing, so a bit like some other tools that I've mentioned in the past, is FlexClip. I have been experimenting with it. It has so many tools, actually, a lot of them, unsurprisingly, AI-powered. But if you are into video and audio creation, editing management, take a look. Head on over to go.christianschiller.com/FlexClip. What is Key Factor? Your slogan is digital trust. Maybe let's begin a little bit with when the company began and the kind of overarching aims, and we'll dig into a little bit of what we mean by trust in this context.
So Key Factor was founded in the early 2000s. Our CTO was an expert in public key infrastructure and had a really strong Microsoft partnership and would go and consult around helping to set up PKI for enterprise customers that were using Microsoft products. And over time, he kept running into issues where customers were having outages because certificates were expiring, and that was causing a lot of challenges with their business. So he created a tool, and that was one of our first products that does certificate lifecycle automation. So that basically understands all the certificates in an environment and then gets them under management and prevents outages. Now, my responsibility at Key Factor is on the IoT and OT and now agentic AI side. But we have been in business serving enterprise IT and then these more emerging markets and emerging use cases when it comes to issuing secure digital identities to establish trust and then also automating the rotation of them.
I mean, 24 years ago doesn't sound like a crazy long time, but in the scope of connected devices, it's a tremendous amount has changed. What was the landscape like then? Was it simpler or harder? Or
That's a great point. It was maybe more, we had one choice, or enterprises had one choice, and it was Microsoft product. Mm. And again, Microsoft has a lot of great products. They still are a big partner of ours. We now use them in a few different capacities. More, you know, our product can be deployed via their Azure marketplace and run in their Azure cloud. So we all have evolved. I think enterprises that use that PKI was because it was the choice. It was relatively, you know, you follow the steps and you set it up and it was robust. I think it's just not modern. And why we also have now developed our own certificate authority platform or a CA platform to have be a replacement for that is because we saw that they weren't adding new features and new modern protocols. And so we have a development team actually out of Stockholm, Sweden, that continues to listen to our customer needs and, you know, modify our solution to be a modern, scalable, flexible infrastructure that we see, especially as we are having a lot of digital disruptions, you know, with, like I mentioned already, agentic AI workloads, but containerized workloads, emergence of IoT devices, and just a lot more connectivity to your point. It's very dynamic, and it's not as simple as, oh, we're just managing some firewalls and some enterprise devices and they're in a data center and they're, you know, easy to do. And I don't want to simplify it too much. There's a ton of work that has gone into that, but there's just a lot more varieties, I think, of workloads that we need to secure to make sure that we are protecting our enterprises and the businesses that we run.
So what we've talked about certificates a lot, and I think a lot of people will know what they are, but let's maybe just do a very quick explainer on what is a certificate and why does that prove anything?
Yes. So a certificate is basically a unique digital identity. And when I talk to my family about this and I try to explain what is a certificate, the easiest way to understand is to consider a passport or a driver's license is issued to them. And it is issued to you by your governing, you know, municipality or your country. And that country is the trusted authority. It is the root of trust that says, yes, I believe that this person is this person. I'm going to give them this identity, this passport, this ID. Then when I travel to Germany or to Stockholm and vice versa, then that country trusts my country. We allow these passports to be used as our validation, essentially. And we're allowed to get in and we're allowed to communicate and do our business and that sort of thing. Those passports also have expiration periods. And in my country, it's 10 years. So after 10 years, I have to go back in. I have to get revalidated. And that's the same kind of concept that we have here in this, with this technology, is that we don't want to have a certificate that is just valid forever, because that weakens the purpose of it, because it could be hacked over time. And one of the things we're seeing in the industry is the trend towards shorter validity periods. And I believe in a few years, we're going to be down to a recommendation of 47 days of duration for a certificate. You're going to need to rotate that every 47 days. That's not in all use cases. But if you just think about the amount of work it's going to take to keep all those up to date and refreshed and all that, it's because we're trying to level up the security posture by using these strong dynamic certificates, as opposed to static credentials that are limited, that can be weaker, that can be hacked, and that can be broken.
And how does someone become a certificate authority? You know, with a country and a passport, we could get into various discussions about whether you do or don't trust various authorities there, but we kind of do. With certificate authorities, there's not just one body per country. There's quite a few. So how does someone, what's the kind of process a certificate authority has to go through to become trusted in the first place?
Mm-hmm. Well, there are consortiums. So there's the CAB Forum Certificate Authority Browser Forum. And we have people in our team that is really all they focus on. And they are there to understand the policies, the way that we need to work together, and you know, how from both a public trust perspective, which is when you log into your banking website and there it, you know, it allows you feel like you can go and type in your information and do online transactions. That's public trust. There's also then what we are focused in on, which is private trust. But it's the same sort of thing. It's you should have a root of trust that you own. And you know, that's really what our sort of offering is when we work with enterprises, is to stand up this infrastructure that is tied completely to their company. So whether they're connecting networked devices in their business or they're putting a certificate in every smart meter that they make in their factories, and they're shipping all those smart meters out to a utility and being installed in all of these facilities, then that whole chain of trust exists to the device, to the cloud that needs to pull the data out, to then a backend system that maybe is billing or charging. So there's a lot that these certificates are used for, which is basically establishing zero trust within whichever environment you are working in.
But you as a company, what kind of process do you have to go through to even issue those in the first place?
So our software is, it's a software.
I think I mean more like to even be approved to be able to issue certificates out to people? Is there a process you have to go through, or is it all mostly handled through cryptographical records? And even I could apply to be a certificate authority if I wanted to go through sufficient auditing of that.
Well, so honestly, this is not so much my area of expertise. I'm really focused more on the applications. I'm sure there's a process. Maybe I can find out later how you do that. But yes, it's...
I often wonder because, I mean, you talked about reissuing. I run my own small server and use Tailscale, and they do certificates through Let's Encrypt, which is a pretty common option for a lot of people running like their own little things on a small kind of more hobbyist way. And that's eternally renewing. And it is actually annoying because, coming to your point, you use those certificates actually in multiple places. So one aspect, the certificate is renewed, but it also needs to be copied somewhere else and configured somewhere else and moved somewhere else. So we end up with like some services which are secure and some services which aren't anymore. And every time it's like,
I know.
What can I access now?
Yes. Yes, I know. But I think, you know, if I try to be a little bit more forward thinking in terms of where we're seeing more certificates used and why, I think it's because we have had decades of experience of using digital identities to secure the infrastructure that runs our businesses or runs our power, runs our critical infrastructure systems. It's just proven to work. And it's an identity that can't really be forged. It can't really be shared. There's this whole, key exchange, and there's a lot of math behind the algorithms that we use to create that encrypted channel that has been very solid and used, which is why we are recommending that people continue to use this in these emerging use cases, whether it's an IoT device or a new workload, such as an AI agent, right? And if that agent is perhaps even working in a container, we should have an identity issued for that container. And that could be even a very short-lived thing. It could be something that maybe only needs to live for, I don't know, 5 seconds, 10 seconds, do its purpose, validate, authenticate into a system and get the validation back that it's allowed to get in. And then you can allow that agent to go and do the job that it needs to get done, whether it's going into a database and pulling information to then use as part of your sales cycle, or to get into a set of code and run some analysis on that code as a software developer is trying to write a new feature. I think we are going to see new workloads emerge. We are seeing new workloads emerge. And what we're trying to do is continue on these best practices of using PKI and using strong digital identity as that foundation of trust. And it's just something that I think continues to grow.
Before we go on, can I just clarify one thing? Because you've mentioned PKI a few times and it's on your website a few times. What does it stand for?
I should have started with that. I just sort of assume. I get too excited. Public key infrastructure.
Okay, I assumed it was public key or private key something. It was the I that I wasn't completely sure. So I'm assuming what Keyfactor offers is the kind of multiple sides of this. So issuing a certificate to all of these payloads is one thing, but on the other side of it, you also need to verify that. So is that kind of the tool chain that you offer? It's the issuing, but it's also that database that has an agentic service saying hello can also uses something provided by you to check that it's legitimate. Is that the case?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So you provision an identity into a device or a workload, and then that device should be validated and verified. And that's essentially, there's this key exchange, and then you create this secure MTLS channel, and that's by where you can transmit secure information or information securely. And I like to think of it in an IoT use case where you have an embedded pacemaker, let's say, and that medical device is inside a person, and there's a certificate inside that device that then allows a secure connection to the phone that is outside the person's body, right? And then there is another secure connection that goes from the phone, probably through either Wi-Fi or cellular, back to some central database that's collecting all that patient information, perhaps if a doctor wanted to look at it and monitor, you know, what's happening. This happens also in the glucose monitoring and insulin, you know, continuous dispensation or dispensing systems, right? For patients with diabetes, that sort of thing it's really critical that is not intercepted or changed or modified, because you're talking about people's bodies and their health and safety. So I like to use those examples also so that you can kind of relate why we want to have secure connections between devices and the application and then the backend server, because all of these things could have a attacker try to get into them, because data can be gold and data is very useful and powerful. And that's just kind of the world that we live in these days. Yeah. Whether someone's trying to hack into a water treatment plant and change the chemical levels by getting into the SCADA system, like these things are real.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because the thing that's been in the back of my mind is, you know, secure connections are one thing, but if that secure connection is accessed through insecure credentials from a human or another workload, then it doesn't really matter per se. You know, if it's admin 123456, it doesn't matter if it's secure or not, really. Does your platform handle anything like that as well, or is that mostly led up to the kind of account provider side?
Yeah, we're really focused in on, if you would like to have a certificate authentication, we will help provide the platform for that.
Because you know, the example you mentioned about this chemical or the water company, it was accessed through some, you know, it's always through a human factor, isn't it? I think it was accessed through some open remote desktop terminal or something, wasn't it?
Yes, it is. But that is the world that we live in when you have remote access. I spent a lot of time in the OT space and understanding the challenges that we have in manufacturing. There's a lot of legacy control systems. There's HMIs, which is that human machine interface. That's sort of your terminal to get into this machine. There's a lot of different pieces that we have to think about securing. And we used to have the mindset in the factory that you could firewall it off and you could say, oh, my whole factory is disconnected from the internet, so I'm totally fine. But now hackers are finding ways to get in, and we have to be securing those pieces.
You're giving me, this was kind of actually a good lead to the other thing that was in my mind. You know, you mentioned there's anything from hundreds to hundreds of thousands to more potential touch points to the public internet or through some degree. How do you help customers find them all, I suppose?
Yes, that's a great point. It's part of it is you can't secure what you can't see, of course. So I think discovery is one of the first things you have to do within your enterprise. And we actually recently acquired a company. And again, I don't want this to be a product pitch, but I'm telling you this story because we have recently added new solutions into our portfolio that help do that specifically, discover cryptographic assets that are probably lying within your enterprise that might've been issued and you don't know what they are, where they are. That could be keys, tokens, certificates. Yeah. So yes, step one, always discover. And then once you have a landscape of that and an inventory of that, then you categorize that by what are the weakest ones? What are the ones maybe with old encryption, or what are the ones that maybe have been linked to some other sort of vulnerability? And this is all part of governance and just a corporate policy around cybersecurity, whether you are running a factory or you're running your internal environment. Just, you have to know what you have so that then you can make it better and start to put stronger credentials, get rid of these static keys, move over to a modern dynamic PKI infrastructure that you own and have more control over. Great point. Step one.
So we're here talking about something that you, and I'll caveat this will come out after next week. So we're here to talk about something you mentioned at KubeCon US, I'm assuming, because the Europe one's already happened this year, which, I mean, I think KubeCon has become a little bit more than just containers these days, but I've lost my train of thought for a second. It doesn't matter. Okay. We're here to talk about something you launched at KubeCon recently, and You've mentioned containers a few times as well, but you've also mentioned these sort of new agentic payloads, which are often also handled by Kubernetes and many other things. But what I think it'd be interesting to dig into quite what is it, agentic AI agents has become a rather catch-all term for a lot of different things right now. So I was at a presentation for a company yesterday where they had a what looked like, I mean, it was hard to exactly know without trying it, a much more kind of locked down agentic platform for enterprises that connected a lot of sort of typical enterprise applications together and enabled customer services to leverage those. And I could see a very perfect use case for something like KeyFactor there, you know, securing these connections between these many disparate services. But they're not always that reliable. So how can you offer secure credentials to AI agents that are unpredictable but still valid? Like, how does the agent, I think I'm wondering how like a very dynamic workload even knows what it needs. I don't know if this question makes sense, but you know, a container is relatively reliable. You kind of know what's going to go into it, but an agentic payload, you don't always know what it's going to be or what it's going to try and do, I suppose.
Yeah. So we have part of our innovation team has been working on and has some demos that we showed at a KubeCon in North America around having a container be deployed with Claude Code into an Itzio service mesh that can it's configured to provision this MTLS mesh using a certificate that comes from our PKI. So that's really what we have been demoing and talking about.
So
because
the
we
agent
believe,
is deploying the containers more. Than,
yes.
It's that. Okay. There's the connection. Okay. All right.
So yes, we sort of think that these modern agents are probably going to be doing these shorter tasks that as containerized workloads will be.
Okay.
You know, more suits for that. So that's why we are, again, that's part of what we're demoing and testing out and talking to others at this show specifically. Yeah. But it's really still focused on just authenticating that agent, eventually getting to, can this be used for agent-to-agent communication, similar to my example about the device, the IoT devices, you're just creating that secure channel. If you could do that between two agents and then they can, you know, have this much more autonomous way of working. So that's sort of what we're thinking. Then there still is that next layer that needs to occur, which is around what are they authorized to do once they have been authenticated. Yeah. And that's partners. We have partners that do PAM and that sort of thing and can help understand how, you know, what sort of authorization people are, agents are allowed to do.
Yeah. So this is actually a question I asked of this thing yesterday of like, how do these services know who's who kind of thing? And it was very much you still lean on the user account side. And in this case, we're just ensuring those connections are valid, I suppose. So just to clarify again, because I just want to really be sure, for a while you've had containerized support in KeyFactor, and now the AI agents are almost like an orchestrator. They're almost I don't know if they're managing or replacing Kubernetes, but they're not doing anything wild. They're issuing container payloads, basically. So there is a little bit of ring fencing there.
Yeah. I think, again, we're trying to not reinvent the wheel and have a brand new way of authenticating these agents. We're just trying to say, let's use a trusted infrastructure that we know has been working and we've been using in the enterprise for decades to now just issue these identities to this new type of workloads. And if you have a very flexible dynamic PKI that can issue millions and millions of identities, which our product does, because we have certificates that go into consumer electronic devices that you have in your pocket and medical devices that already mentioned, we already are issuing many, many millions of certificates that go into those types of things. So our product is very well suited to the high volume of identities that are going to need to be spun up and then ultimately dissolved, because these are short-lived workloads in containers. So that's sort of what we're working with. And we, again, like I mentioned, our technical team has been demoing and testing this out. So we're not just talking about it, we're actually doing it and showing it.
Okay. One of the topics that the company and yourself has mentioned before is this AI identity crisis. It's a cool sounding phrase, but what is meant specifically by that? Is it not knowing what the AIs are? Is it just knowing they're legitimate? Is it, yeah.
Yeah, but both. So I early on when we started brainstorming around this, I thought back to how so many of my friends and colleagues and even articles I would read nowadays, or I would go to shows, everybody talks about how they're doing AI. So if all companies in all industries are trying to bring in AI for operational efficiency because their board told them they need to be, to gain some benefits, we have a risk of employees deploying something that you as an IT organization might not know about, might be getting access to a credential or a token or a database. And then that person maybe leaves the company. But that thing has been deployed. So it's all about, to me, having a solid strategy for how you, allowing your employees to leverage this new tech, but then securing it with the right authentication so that it's not allowed to get into your payment system unless that's the agent that you're creating and you need it to go, or it's not allowed to get into your customer database because there's personal information, GDPR considerations, and all of that. So it's really about creating a policy, understanding how you're going to allow these agents to be deployed and used inside your company. Because if you don't do that, and chances are maybe some of this already has been happening because people are testing it, to my point, you're going to find some of these agents that maybe have gone rogue or just have been there. You're going to find it in an audit, or something might happen, and if hopefully not, but it could be a breach in the future. So these are the things that we just try to talk to CISOs and IT leaders about. Let's start having these conversations and figure out how to prevent these before they become a problem, because people are testing that out. Not at a wide, huge scale of deploying thousands of agents, but we have use cases where people are trying to be smarter about how they are doing outbound sales. People are trying to be smarter about how they do product development and writing code and checking their software development lifecycle. And also from a marketing perspective, how do we understand how to position our content to target the right audience? Like, AI can be used for these things and there's going to be benefits. Let's just figure out how, when we have agents involved, that we're allowing them to only do what we want them to do in a very constrained way right now.
You mentioned something in there about, these agents are doing lots of things. I don't know if this is something you can talk to, but people are also using them to attempt to break encryption and hack into services and things like that. We put a lot of trust in the encryption we use on keys at the moment, but it won't last forever. And I do believe, yes, you are using the quantum readiness keywords as well. And a lot of people are worried. I'm still a little bit uncertain about when and if quantum is ever going to be here, but it's a whole other concern in the future. Looking, the company's been around for 20 years, maybe 5-10 years. Do you have also concerns around AI agents actually ruining your business in the near future as well, because they're getting around things? Because,
it's a really interesting question. I think AI agents could have the capability of accelerating the need for us to move to more post-quantum robust encryption. That's a good point I feel like you were hinting at there, because the whole quantum computers are going to be able to crack the current encryption that we have today, right? And we also have been working with NIST, as several other companies have, to have the finalized post-quantum crypto algorithms be tested. And then now we're building them into our products so we can issue post-quantum resistant certificates that is more modern than the classical that we've been using, that's stronger, math, all that amazing stuff. So yes, can an AI agent now work harder to try to crack those than, you know, it's quite possible. So part of our message is really around, we know that this is going to come. I've heard projections, maybe a quantum computer could be in 2030. Mm-hmm. And then in 2030, is everything that we've encrypted just going to be broken? It's one of those like Y2K moments. I don't know if it's really going to be that bad.
Unfortunately, Y2K was not a problem in really the end. So maybe.
You're smart, very smart. So yeah, but it's one of those things. If we can think about it, then there's a chance of it happening. So why not? Let's sort of be testing out the use of post-quantum encryption in some of our systems. So some of our banking customers, our government customers that have really secure, really important systems they need to secure are testing out post-quantum encryption. And that's, I think that's an important thing to do because the AI could advance how fast we need to migrate to that. It is quite possible within the next, you're asking about 5 years, that we're going to see some of that happen.
2030 is, well, it's less than 5 years now. So yeah.
I know, right.
Finally, so we're obviously just talking about a new feature that has just been released, but I don't know, KubeCon in a year's time or some other big show in a year's time, what else are you working on in general or specific terms that you think is something to worth mentioning?
Yes. So I think we just continue to build out this whole framework of digital trust within an organization. So to me, it's really about using cryptography and using identity to form a framework of digital trust for whatever use case you might have within your business. And now that we have this discovery capability, this issuance capability, and this automation capability, we have a full-fledged suite of products. So that is really what we're going to be focusing in on in this next year is the message of digital trust, how we can help customers do that end to end, whether you're in an enterprise IT organization, my world of IoT and OT, or this new emerging world of agentic identity. So I think it's really more applying the solid products that we've been developing for years and configuring them into these use cases and just building out that framework.
And bringing them to enterprise. I think if that's been the theme of the week from speaking to you to this demo yesterday, it's bringing the cool, new, buzzy, edgy technologies to enterprise environments where they need a little bit more control and management and understandability to them, I suppose. They can't just go off the rails. There needs to be a degree of protection around them, I suppose. And that's where we're getting to quite quickly, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Cool.
Great.
Yeah, I don't think KeyFactor is necessarily a service anyone just tries on a whim. I think it's something they have to come and talk to you about. But if people are interested, it's keyfactor.com. And I think if someone knows they need it, they'll come and find you.
Yes, we have a lot of great content and documents out there for people to learn. So happy to have any follow-ups as well if anyone has questions.
Cool. Okay. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
So that was it. That was our guest today. Thank you very much for joining me in the Tech Lounge. I have been Christian Schiller. If you want to know more about Tech Lounge, head on over to christianschiller.com or please tell your friends about us. It's quiet and cozy in here, but the more listeners, the merrier. You can find more at christianschiller.com/podcast or in the show notes or episode notes, wherever you found this podcast. Thank you very much for joining me, and you're most welcome next time.